Hey, it's Broken Office Chair, a podcast produced by Alternatives. Broken Office Chair is hosted by Alternatives Executive Director, Bessie Alcantara. Bessie's a Chicago native, first-generation Salvadoran-Mexican-American who's passionate about dismantling systemic racism. In each episode, Bessie will be joined by her friends and colleagues who are ready to speak candidly about their experiences as people of color in their various professions. In the episodes, they'll address topics such as issues in the nonprofit sector, racial equity, DEI in practice, and much, much more.
That actually brings me to some of the policies that we're seeing roll out. So some of the things that, if folks are not aware, we have Medicaid cuts. Some of the arguments are that the only folks that are going to lose their Medicaid are going to be people who are undocumented. We have the potential for hospital closures. We have SNAP benefits being also cut. Supreme Court, I believe, just approved for the shutdown of the Department of Education. Help me here. What else?
We're seeing civil rights departments at all the federal agencies being cut down. So, like, if you have a complaint, you feel your civil rights are violated, you have very little avenues of recourse at the federal level to pursue that. We see a new travel ban that got enacted this year. We see people's protests rights being diminished, like our First Amendment rights to protest are saying, hey, you can only protest on issues that are not against the interests of the United States. Very problematic. We're seeing green cards, visa holders, even citizens being detained and locked up upon coming into the country, being sent to places like Florida and El Salvador. Some citizens, are missing.
Citizens being deported specifically. Citizens. People are missing that story.
Yes. We're seeing attacks against LGBTQ, specifically trans rights. Mm-hmm. We're seeing women's rights be at risk again, too. I think we're so many different directions of it. But instead, we're seeing over $150 million be infused into ICE, which is making it one of the largest military groups in the world.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And I just saw where they're offering a $40,000 sign-on bonus with a salary of $100,000. Mm-hmm. And who wouldn't want to sign up for that, right? Like, and it's who are the people they're recruiting? And now we hear about the museum this past weekend where ICE agents showed up in Chicago.
Oh, yes, at the Puerto Rican Museum,
right? And luckily, Chicago is a place that is welcoming of its immigrant community. And there's resources available that they were able to protect those that could have been impacted in rapid response work, but not every place has that. We're seeing what happened in L.A. where protesters were out there against ICE raids, and just yesterday, finally, some of the National Guard stepped away from it. But I dwell on the immigrant rights because it's one that's often the most ignored, is because, especially for those, well, we have to say we're only 249 years old as a country. Mm-hmm. All of us are from somewhere else, right? Like, we all know, we all brag about it, right? Like, you could say, like, oh, I'm one-third Irish and a quarter of this and that.
In all fairness, some of my ancestors are from here, just colonized.
Right.
Right.
And I'll get to that point in a second, but, like, most of us have family from somewhere else here.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't realize that the broader impact of some of these immigration policies could impact us. We take the birthright argument, for example. Thankfully, a federal judge just put it on pause for the time being. But even my own parents are like, we came here and did it the right way. But I'm like, yeah, but if the next domino in this birthright citizenship revocation goes through, you have to remember that you became citizens after your children were born. So that means your children could be at risk. You may be at risk. And now he's talking about Rosie O'Donnell losing her citizenship, right? Like, if someone like her loses it, who else can lose it if they speak out against the interest of the federal government? But I think I always talk about immigration and then global issues, because it's, as you're mentioning, threads between the issues. What we're seeing happening in places like Palestine and the U.S. involvement and resources, and then in Sudan and our role in geopolitical politics and the different rhetorics that we see in places like that versus our support of Ukrainians, for example, are so similar to what we see in our own backyard of how we treat especially Black and brown communities and especially indigenous communities, as you mentioned. These are similar things that we did to our own people that we are so ashamed to acknowledge or just brush under a rug. Occasionally we get a land acknowledgement every now and then, right? Like, woo!
Plan acknowledgements are actually my pet peeve.
Yeah, it's like, all right, we did a shitty thing once, if I can say that. Sorry.
Yeah,
But, like, that's it, right? And but what are we doing to bring justice to these impacted communities? And now we're taking away resources, the list that you mentioned, of our most vulnerable and marginalized communities, putting them in even more of a disenfranchisement that they already were because they needed a lot of those government supports. We were isolating them even more. So what do we see?
We haven't even touched on like climate impact as well as some of this legislation.
And who is impacted by climate issues?
When we talked about Indigenous communities, that's one of the first things that just popped into my mind.
Lives and livelihood directly impacted for so many of these communities, and we're taking that away.
One of the biggest concerns that Supreme Court just ruled on is that federal judges can now only rule on their state unless it's a class action. So with this conversation about birthright citizenship, my understanding is 28 states did not participate in that class action. So
because it was before the 30 days taking effect of the ruling on birthright, it was able to be a nationwide pause on it.
Okay.
But after that goes into, from my understanding.
Right. So at the end of July.
At the end of July, then
28 states will not have birthright protection for young
place.
For babies being born. And so when we talk about, even if you want to approach this from a me standpoint, what does that mean for folks? Like, does that mean what we saw with reproductive rights? Does that mean people are crossing state lines just to get that birthright? Does that mean resources are now tighter in places that did protect birthright?
I'll say a combination of both. I think if I was not a citizen and was to have a child, I would really look at where there's the most protections for that child in place. And what that would look like and where I could, just if I was a woman who chose to have an abortion, where I would be the safest to do so. What sort of advocacy efforts are in place? And now we're living in a climate where we don't know which of our rights will be taken away tomorrow or later today. And it's, where am I going to be safest to do so? So are we going to see migration to those states? Are we going to see... how are resources going to be allocated? Like, not everyone can afford to travel to a different state.
Yeah.
Like, we're seeing that with reproductive rights, and not everyone has the means to. And organizations trying to support those movements have limited capacity, too, especially now with the crackdown on federal and local and institutional funding, as you probably know, at Alternatives. And so it's just creating this fear, alienation, and this uncertainty of who am I in this new America, newer America, and what rights do I really have? And am I safe?
Yeah. I just actually had some friends move to California because they felt like for LGBTQ rights specifically, they would be safer in California and their families were there. And they just let me know 2 weeks ago that they were moving. I think it was about 2 weeks. And I was like, but we're in Illinois. And then yesterday, I saw that Rush Hospital was stopping gender-affirming care for minors. And I was like, oh, so they were right. And so I keep having these moments of, like, I'm naively believing that, like, we're safe in this little blue on little area. But even within that, there's so much bowing down to the pressure right now that... are any of our rights safe? Even if you're living in a little, like a city with Chicago that tends to be so strongly progressive in theory.
Yeah, I think it's just people don't know who has their back. And the city on Monday hosted a couple hour, like, Chicago Protecting Our Dignity event where the mayor, chief of staff, a couple others, elected official and appointed official spoke about how they're pushing back against change in federal policy and actions. And then we had breakouts on different issues like environment, civil rights, immigration, women, education. And what I was hearing, listening to conversation at different tables is, yeah, there's a lot of organizations on the ground doing the work, doing the protection. But what we don't always know is, outside of rhetoric and connecting, like how much does the city have our back in fighting back against these federal policies? Like, are we truly protected? Are they willing to show up when it really matters to these things? And I think it's they're doing a decent enough job, but I think there's always room for more to show that our communities feel safe here. Because as I work with undocumented communities and other immigrant communities and Muslim communities, I see so much isolation and uncertainty with them that they don't know. Not a day goes by where I don't get a phone call. I run this 24-hour hotline for travel-related issues, and people of all faiths, backgrounds, country of origin are calling me like, hey, is it safe for me to travel right now? Citizens, yeah. Right? And yeah. And with visa holders, I am embarrassed not to tell them. I was like, I would just advise you not to travel right now.
Yep.
And it's just the most horrible thing to have to say is I don't know if it's if you're going to be allowed back into the country.
Mm-hmm. Going back to not knowing who has your back, right? We're supposed to be a sanctuary city. And I just saw a statement from the Progressive Caucus in Chicago that called for an inquiry for those deportations and arrests that happened in the South Loop a couple of weeks back, and found that CPD actually did participate in supporting ICE. And so we think that we're, again, safe, that there's an ordinance or whatever protecting us in this situation to keep folks. And so going back to, like, the impact of that, what does that mean for the children of undocumented folks being able to go to school?
You raised such a good point. And
hospitals.
Yeah, and it's and hospitals are already closing, right, because of some of these issues. But when you talk about CPD specifically, it's, one, so many communities have such negative concept of law enforcement from relations back in their own home or just trauma that they have from based on what they have experienced here. And so CPD can do a much better job of building relationships within communities to build that trust. But number two is, I don't believe all CPD officers are on the side of the people all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I was at this Chicago Police Foundation benefit late last fall before the election, and I was one of the few people of color in the room, mostly very white.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the speakers said, at least when Donald Trump takes office, we can finally stop crime in the city or something like that. Standing ovation. You know, and it alarmed me that there are so many people, police officers who live in the state who are supporting this rhetoric. I don't care if you're Republican or Democrat. I care, do you support this hateful rhetoric that he espouses and that you hear him talk about all the time and agree with it? And that scares me with how communities are impacted on a daily basis in their neighborhoods, at their schools, at the hospitals. If I go to a protest wearing my Palestinian flag t-shirt, am I going to be a target? If I'm wearing a Save Immigrant t-shirts, am I going to be targeted? Am I going to have to carry my passport around to show that I'm a U.S. citizen so that I'm not targeted?
Will it even matter?
Will it even matter? Am I going to be held indefinitely until that? Like, I had a citizen who was held at the airport for 40 hours just because they wanted to ask him questions about where he was and how much money he spent and all these things, right? So we're seeing these things impact everybody and broader law enforcement, both state, I mean, local and federal, are people really can't tell the difference. The layman doesn't know the difference. Like, they see law enforcement as not on my side.
Mm-hmm.
But when they hear of even one bad apple,
mm-hmm.
it builds its distrust between communities where I don't know if I'm going to call police, if he's going to have my back, or if he's going to arrest me because I look different or act different.
I have definitely had that experience working in North Lawndale, where we called the police to protect a child who had an adult outside waiting for him because he was accusing him of stealing. And police showed up and arrested the child, my 16-year-old. 16-year-old. Mm-hmm. It got tossed out a few days later, but for that night, he spent that night in jail.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And what is that telling every other kid?
Mm-hmm.
You know, to what he's risking. And it goes all back to, like, we're building a culture of fear rather than trust.
Yeah. And I mean, think about that rhetoric, too. And think about, like, Trump's rhetoric around bringing the National Guard into, I mean, he just did it. He talked about it a lot. He talked about making Chicago the example. He ended up making LA the example. I don't know if folks understand that you don't really want military on your streets. You don't really want tanks on your road. Like I said, you know, right before we started this podcast, I told you I was in El Salvador during the Civil War. Even if their so-called peacekeeping, what it does to your sense of safety, your mental health, these are not things that you want.
I live in the South Loop, and I remember after the big protests during the pandemic, I was driving down Roosevelt, and there was only a few ways to get into my neighborhood, mm-hmm. and there was a tank there with armed military officers who mm-hmm. asked to see my ID, and here I am, like, very visible, brown, ethnic, and, like, scared of, am I going to be allowed, like, not only allowed in, but am I safe to even drive home? And
right.
what else could it potentially happen to me? Because often, like, I am what the enemy could look like to them. And it's, we, so many communities have that fear. If they're pulled over, right, like, people have different experiences. There's jokes, there's stories, like, someone who's white does not have the very same experience as someone who's black when they're pulled over mm-hmm. by a police officer. And why is that?
Yeah, you bring up something for me, and that's this conversation around due process. Because we often rely on due process and thinking, like, I'm even seeing it in the conversation around citizens being detained, right? And they're like, well, just get your lawyer and you'll be fine. But what is currently happening right now is the conversation that if you are suspected of being in this country illegally, you don't have the right to due process anymore.
You raise such a good point, and I'm pulling something up. It's former Alderwoman Carrie Austin, mm-hmm. Indicted on bribery charges.
Mm-hmm.
And just they delayed the case trial indefinitely because, unfortunately, she's dealing with cancer, some mm-hmm. heart issues, and all that. And I raise that because on one side, I send out all the good energy and vibe for her to navigate this process and that she heals completely and all that. But then I wonder if someone of color or low economically challenged community member asked for that same right to have their case postponed while they mm-hmm. were navigating health issues, would the judge grant them that same would they get that same privilege? And I don't think so.
Right.
You know, and why are certain people given different privilege than others in our legal system and our judicial mm-hmm. system is that we see people differently. And, you know, we look at statistics and who is, you know, people of color are disproportionately sentenced. They're disproportionately charged for offenses, pullover statistics with law enforcement, traffic stops. Like, why is this happening? And it questions, to your point, the due process in our country. Are we truly innocent until we're proven guilty, or are some people guilty and have to prove their innocence?
There's been a little chat that I've seen around the lack of due process for folks who are undocumented. And the conversation is, they're undocumented. That would never happen to me.
Yeah, but we're seeing that it does.
Right.
You know, we see protesters locked up for 3 months who are valid, who are here on green cards, right? Never in my life would I have imagined that someone who's here on a student visa couldn't protest.
And with that particular situation, too, he missed the birth of his child.
His child.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you missed the birth of his child, and thankfully he's suing the government now mm-hmm. for detention. But it's if someone... But it makes me like, and for me, it was a litmus test, right? If it's an issue that is so, not everyone sees eye to eye on, right? Like Palestine and the rights of those facing injustice and violence and death in Gaza, not everyone sees eye to eye on that, unfortunately. But if it's such an issue like that where people are split, what happens, the government got away with doing so much in terms of taking away rights that we took for, that we thought were ours.
Yeah.
What happens when it's other issues that happen?
Yeah.
Well, if now I'm speaking out against Alligator Alcatraz here on mm-hmm. this podcast, can they come knock on my door and detain me indefinitely because I'm speaking out against the interests of the United States? Arguably, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And who's going to get my back? Or is it an issue that because some people agree with what that is, it's going to be normalized and okay to lock me up?
Or will anybody even know that you're detained if you don't have the right to call a lawyer? You don't have, all of your basic rights are gone.
Just check in on me if you could.
Right. We don't hear from Sufyan for a couple of days. Let's find out. But that's what people are missing, that when folks are detained and they don't have the right to due process, they don't also have the right to notify their family members. They just got detained. And family members call and call and can't get any answers.
We see this at the airport specifically because the rights... You don't have rights until you enter the United States. And when you're at Immigration and Customs Control, you still haven't technically entered the United States. So you're here on a visa, visiting your family. They say, we got to take you back to ask you questions. They can hold you there as long as they want to. Without right to a lawyer, they can ask to see your phone. And the more you say no to them, they give them more reasons to deny you entry. We see this with green card holders specifically because they're in that area. They're not quite citizen. And citizens don't have to answer all the questions. They just have to give their name and say, I'm a citizen. They don't have to give over their phone. But with green card holders, they could technically push you into removal proceedings if they find a reason to do that. And you could lose your green card. So we see these people held. I had one for 60 hours that were held. Their family has no idea where they're at because they're sometimes not given phone calls. They're calling me like, hey, Sufyan, Bessie flew in. I just have no idea. Is she safe? Is she okay? She's on medication. Is she getting the medication? Has she been sent back? This is all of her information. So luckily, I'm a lawyer. I'm able to build relationships with customs officers where I'm able to at least find out, yeah, they're in. This is what's going on. This is what's being said. But the common person, you're going to call. They're not going to give you this information.
Right. I wouldn't even know who to call to get access.
And these families are just worried for worst-case scenarios and are thinking about all the bad things that could be happening. And even, like, this person was coming in from Palestine via Jordan, was sent back, right, to a country where his life's at risk every day, but still so proud to be Palestinian that he doesn't want to claim asylum in this country because he wants to go back there and show support for his people. They didn't claim asylum. So he got sent back. And, you know, his family and friends are just now even more worried about him.
Two things come up for me. One, I want to name that also happens is when they're holding you like that at a point of entering the country, what a lot of folks don't realize is especially people who are not native English speakers, who have trauma with officers, who are being yelled at for more information for 40 hours straight, often sign documents to give up their legal status into this country and can't enter back for 10, 20 years.
We always recommend in multiple languages, do not sign anything ever without a lawyer present. Ever.
Right.
And for that, they can't force you to sign it without, like, if you ask for a lawyer before they ask you to sign it, they can't force you to sign it, right?
But people are fearful.
In a lot of our communities, the problem is, one, we over-explain. We think, like, if I ask you, do you know what time it is, you're going to tell me the time, and the answer should just be, yes, I know what the time is, right? Like, we tend to give answers that we think that they're asking the question. Mm-hmm. And then we also try to give answers that we think that they want rather than the right answer. So we see people misrepresenting truth sometimes because they think that's what they're supposed to do rather than just being like honest and upfront and being like, this is what's going on. And this is like, and just creating more problems for themselves here and signing away things. And people like who are detained, they're not staying at the Hilton of O'Hare.
Right,
they're
exactly.
They're staying in like one room cells. There's jail, there's cells at O'Hare that people are staying in where they're given food and adequate, but it's like a bench, basically, that they're staying on for tens of hours until they decide what if they're going to be allowed into this country or they're going to be sent back or they're going to be sent to immigration for further proceedings.
Yeah, and what people can do out of desperation in a moment like that, right?
Yes.
So the second thing that I wanted to bring up in this conversation around detainment and due process is what happens at an entry point when we now don't believe in due process and we've now opened the door to stripping citizens of their rights. And is it possible in the future for somebody to go through my phone at a entry point and say, I don't like any of your advocacy that you've done. I don't like how you've spoken about ex-government official. We're going to just send you to Alligator Alcatraz.
So you as a citizen right now at this moment.
At this moment.
At this moment at, you know, 410 on today's date.
Right.
Have rights where they have to allow you into this country.
Mm-hmm.
Unless there's a criminal issue against you.
Mm-hmm.
An outstanding warrant, for example. Then they would call the FBI, local law enforcement, whatever sort of case that
yeah.
is, and detain you. But I say that with an asterisk.
Right.
Because if protesting specifically now, we say against for Palestinian rights is found as a criminal offense, which the path we're walking on it could be,
mm-hmm.
then that could you could be like, all right, you protested or you spoke out against it. That's actually a criminal offense. So we're going to arrest you for it.
Mm.
But they still they can't not allow you into the country.
Mm-hmm.
And then you still have those as a citizen, those due process rights.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what we also know is for people who want visas, green cards, and applying for citizenship, they are doing a more in-depth look at people's social media accounts.
Mm-hmm.
So everything from liking a post to posting or resharing something can and will be held against you as you navigate those systems.
Mm-hmm.
So you want to apply for a tourist visa, but you led a pro-Palestine, and I'm using Palestine for the case because that's been the most divisive issue
yeah.
and where people are being held the most accountable for.
Mm-hmm.
So you held a pro-Palestine protest in Denmark. Probably they won't let you even on a tourist visa here or give you a green card status or let you become a citizen in this country in the way things are current. And now when you enter the border, they're asking to see phones. As a citizen, you can say, I'm not comfortable with it. What they will do is they can still hold you for a long period of time. Now we see this as bullying tactics
yeah.
where they're going to try to get you to cave under, like, sitting there indefinitely. All right, fine, here's my phone. You don't have to give your password, but we always advise people to remove, like, biometrics, like the facial scan. They can't force you to give the password, but what they can do is take your phone and send it back to you a month, a week later. Sometimes it takes a bit longer
wow.
than that. They can take that.
That alone would be jarring to a lot
yeah,
of folks. Yeah,
a lot of people. Now, for green cards and citizens, they have less rights. So for a visa holder, they can be like, we're not going to allow you in if you don't show us what's on your phone.
Mm-hmm.
And if you say no, we're not going to allow you into this country. What do you have to hide? For green card, it's a little bit more gray, but I've seen a couple instances where they've used it for removal proceedings
mm-hmm.
or for pressuring people to sign away their green cards. If you'll show us your phone, we'll let you in, no problem, et cetera, et cetera. I have to preface, it's always case officer by case officer.
Yeah.
Right? There's some who are very sympathetic to immigrant issues. There are some who are biased and have that. And what we saw with the first travel ban in 2017 is Trump's policies empowered customs and immigration officers to be more arbitrary and biased and normalize some of these behaviors. And what I'm also hearing now is there's been a lot of policies in place, especially with criminal histories of green card holders, which are now just being enforced at a more strenuously.
Mm-hmm.
So things that they would let slide about previous arrests and things like that, now they're holding and making sure every T is crossed and I's. So even if there's like the smallest mark on your record, they're being like, that's a removable offense, where usually they've seen and taken the totality as a whole and been like, all right, you're fine, come on in.
What I've also been saying is that if you have any time in this country as undocumented, that is considered enough of a criminal offense.
Yeah. I mean, anything, if it's in the books as a criminal offense, it can and may be used against you.
For clarification, though, one of the things I'm seeing on the internet is that being here undocumented is actually a civil offense.
Yeah, it's civil. It is, you can't go to jail for being undocumented. Like, they just send you. It's administrative and civil.
Got it.
Right? Like, it's not even civil because, like, they're not going to sue you for being here undocumented.
Okay.
Right? Civil charges is usually, like, there's damages and, like, you say mm-hmm. something mean to me, I'm going to sue you for the emotional distress of it and try to get money for you or changing it. And that's where the government gets away with a lot of these are administrative procedures. So even the due process rights and administrative procedures are a lot more gray area.
And so I think for me, and we talked about this, right? You just said this, your parents were undocumented. My parents were undocumented.
Mine were not undocumented, but they weren't citizens.
Oh, they weren't citizens.
They
came here legally. Right. Mine were just they just came here illegally and were undocumented when I was born. And so it was really interesting to me when the conversations first started around birthright citizenship, because I saw myself in these stories. And so when we talk about all of this, my question always comes back to, like, what does it mean as we're removing birthright citizenship from folks? Like, actually, I was going to go in one direction, but let me go in a different direction. As we talk about removing birthright citizenship, how many people will be left stateless? And then what does that mean for a person to be left stateless?
I don't know the data.
Okay.
The numbers, but a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And arguably, aren't all of us who are born here like citizens due to birthright?
Right.
You know, and but I have to even preface, not every country does that.
Right.
Right. Some have to show a couple generations. Mm-hmm. So it's been such a blessing mm-hmm. that America has always, but it's because of our youth, right? Mm-hmm. It's when the Constitution was made, half the guy founding fathers were immigrants.
Right.
You know, and we forget that. But it's what color was their skin? What countries were they migrating from?
Right, and that's the argument right now. That the argument is that they're staying true to the Constitution because the intent of the amendment was to grant citizenship for Black folks. What is your thought on that?
Can you repeat that, please?
So the current administration is arguing that they can revoke birthright citizenship because the amendment that grants us citizenship, the intent of that amendment was to grant citizenship for Black folks who were enslaved.
And that's, I mean, you know, when the Constitution was written, Black folks were only 3/5 of a mm-hmm. of a white person, right? So it's to make sure that those born here, because so many of them came on the transatlantic slave route, were forced here. So
right.
let's make them...
Not willingly migrating.
Yeah, let's right. make them citizens of this country, too. And then the broader impact were all those others who came here for work and all that. Like, let's find ways to make them part of citizenship, too. And realizing, and I think it was the brilliance of our founding fathers and those who wrote those amendments was, you know, to make laws which were more broad encompassing than direct. Mm-hmm. But we saw things like the Chinese Exclusion Act, right, mm-hmm. where people of certain countries could not become citizens. And now we're seeing that same impact now.
Mm-hmm.
And why are some people just treated more humanely than others, right? And
mm-hmm.
and no one's questioning that President Trump's first wife, Ivana, was
people are questioning it.
Yeah, but not
Melania
enough.
Coming under an Einstein
Melania
visa.
Coming and all these things. And what does that mean about their children and all mm-hmm. of these things? And one parent versus two parent and all of these different challenges. But it's not, my problem is let's call all apples apples.
Mm-hmm.
Let's not call the ones from Spanish-speaking countries or Muslim countries or African mm-hmm. countries oranges when they should all be treated the same.
Yeah.
I want to talk a little bit about why we're in these silos, but it's why we're so comfortable collectively of not speaking up and speaking out when we're seeing these things happen.
Mm-hmm.
And we talked a little bit about our politicians. We talked a lot about the courage we're seeing from people like Mahmoud Khalil and Mamdani. But when I look around, it's why isn't there more collective outrage against these things, and between fear and, you know, I see universities and law firms like Cal bowing towards
yeah.
Trump policies.
Harvard is my favorite right now
yeah.
because they're not bowing. Yeah.
They are, but at the same time, I would ask you to examine, like, are they still creating safe spaces for people who are speaking out against
true
injustice,
mm-hmm.
Especially in the Palestinian context?
Yeah.
And if not, then are they truly doing the right work and creating a space, an academic institution where we can have free thought and will and discussion and discourse? Or are people still having specific viewpoints being held as villains in our society? And why don't we see, you know, we had this No Kings rally where everyone showed up and it was mm-hmm. beautiful to see, but why aren't people showing up? There's protests and rallies happening every day almost and mm-hmm. on different issues. Why aren't we saying, hey, we see you? And to me, I think that's the most disheartening aspect of it
mm-hmm.
is just feeling that so many of our communities are so alone facing these. I see the people at the airport and I hear always like, it's not I don't have to worry about it, so I'm not going to show up for them anymore. I don't need to show up. Or, like, I don't agree with this view, so I don't need to show up. And not realizing that today it's your rights. But as we're seeing tomorrow, my rights have been taken away also.
Yeah, I've been seeing one of my favorite things to do, which is extremely toxic, is to read the comments section on posts. And a lot of what I'm seeing is like a disconnect specifically between Black and Brown, because there's so many Latinos that voted for Trump specifically and so many Black folks who didn't, and saying that we did our part, like y'all are on your own. Or y'all, you know, and some of this, there's truth to this. Like, some y'all never showed up for us. There's so much anti-Blackness in other communities. And so the divisions, and folks forget that, like, this system is set up to create these divisions. Because imagine if we all just got together and decided to align and do this thing together, right? But the divisions that were set for us are working. And that was actually going to be my earlier question, because it's not lost on me that at the same time that we're eroding rights and creating divisions, we're also purposefully removing curriculum from our education system. Like, while you were talking about the Chinese Exclusion Act, I remember that quote, like, those who don't know history are what is it? The rest of it? Those who don't know history are destined to repeat it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And we're purposefully leaving folks uneducated while we are purposely creating divisions amongst people and eroding rights.
We are. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, I think we saw this in Nazi Germany, where they started one group after another group after another group. And you know, there's quotes like, first they came after this group,
yes,
and they came after this group, and then this came after this group, and then when they came after me, there was no one left. And I think we are seeing, we're in the middle of that here, and that they're taking away groups that are the most divisive, and sometimes the strongest in terms of advocacy and speaking out and mm-hmm. being bold and courageous, and on issues that people honestly, like, don't care that much about, right? Like, you take... people don't care about Spanish-speaking people in our country. And when we see these tweets about 65 million new bites of food for these alligators, like, people aren't recognizing that there's 65 million Spanish-speaking people in our country, and that's what they're referring to.
Right. They're not speaking to... none of it is okay, but they're not speaking about undocumented specifically.
They're not. But collectively, no one's batting an eye. Like, mm-hmm. we've normalized this sort of rhetoric and we become immune to it. But then when you attack a white issue or a cause, everyone speaks out. I would love to see the same celebrations being that are done for Pride Parade every year being done on some of these other issues. Like, where's the collective effort for immigrant rights? Where's the collective efforts on reproductive rights? Why aren't people out there in full force every year celebrating this so proudly and showing that we care? Look, here's our rainbow, but where's our heart and where's our other things like that? Because people just don't care when it comes to these sorts of things.
I could literally go on every topic that you just named and talk an entire podcast episode on all of the miseducation on education around all of these topics and how folks are purposefully kept in the dark. So you don't know why, for example, if you're a straight white man, why you should care about reproductive rights.
And something I've been thinking a lot about is the left is so terrible with its comms work, right? Like, right, you take reproductive rights and you have conservatives who said, these are baby killers, right? Pro-life. Mm-hmm. Now on the right, we have pro-choice. Mm-hmm. So, like, when you take it just as opposite words, they're not opposites, mm-hmm. you know? And if you do the opposite of pro-life, you're pro-death, right? Like, mm-hmm. so you can't use that word. But, like, their whole framing is these people who choose abortions are all about killing. And the left hasn't done a good enough job of captivating and capturing, like, no, what we're here for is to make sure that a woman has full rights over her body and the choices that she makes over her body. And mm-hmm. it hasn't been a powerful enough messaging.
Because we want that child to be cared for. We want them to be have adequate nutrition, healthcare, education, all of these things.
All of those things.
Because that's always been the argument, right? If you're really pro-life, then what about this entire line? Life doesn't stop once they're born, right? It's the communications issue just really made me laugh, because I feel like the left gets really caught up in nuance. And while we're spending so much time debating with one another, like, we just get kind of get left behind. And there's an accountability. We think about this. Vule talks about this a lot. While progressives or foundations or nonprofits were sitting here collecting data, proving that it works, making sure that we held to the benchmarks or they pull back our funding, et cetera, et cetera. The right is funding their projects for 10, 20 years at a time and backing each other fully. What happened when Trump ran for president the first time? There was a lot of Republicans that spoke out against him. But once he became the front runner, they all got together and really backed them up.
Yeah.
And we just saw our version, not as big, but we just saw our version in New York. And we spent the first part of this podcast talking about how that just created a further division on the left. We get so caught up on nuance and don't really move forward on any of these topics.
Agreed. I mean, yeah, agreed.
With all of that being said, you're supposed to leave us with some words of hope and encouragement. No pressure.
No, I think it's hard, right? We were talking earlier about how there seems to be so little hope out there, mm-hmm. so little faith in our elected officials and those chosen to represent us and the institutions that are in place, and even our neighbors and our friends. But I think we're slowly starting to see the cracks in the wall, and we're starting to raise our eyebrows and question, hey, this doesn't seem right. What's going on here? Why aren't we doing more for these people? And if anything, movements like we are seeing in New York, where people are thinking more about the collective we rather than the I, gives me hope. Seeing the courage from people like Zoran Mamdani and others who are on the ground there saying, we got to take better care of each other and our neighbors. Facilitating conversations like this, where we can talk about the challenges and talk about what are some solutions. How can mm-hmm. we work together to build a better tomorrow collectively for all of us? And seeing people take the time to learn more about the truth behind some of these issues and challenges and deciding to take action. And I've seen a lot of that, and it's beautiful, and I'm hopeful that that will continue. And it's going to be a long 3.5 years, if not more. I think there's some damage which will take a generation to undo.
Agreed.
But it's already we're seeing that, especially with younger generations. I just had coffee with someone from Gen Z before, and just hearing her talk about
my Gen Zer.
Yeah, but that energy, that passion, that like seeing beyond color and faith and all that, not ignoring it, but mm-hmm. seeing that as part of this country that we're mm-hmm. in, and then respecting that and being excited about it and really trying to build a future where all of us can truly feel home in this melting pot that we're supposed to be in. And I want to believe that we're in good hands, and I'm excited to support them as they continue to build that.
Awesome. So where can folks find you online?
I'm on LinkedIn, Sufyan Sohel, and same on Instagram, Sufyan, S as in Sam, U, F as in Frank, Y, A, N as in Nancy, last name Sohel, S, O, H as in Henry, E, L as in Larry, both of those on Instagram and LinkedIn. And talking about travel stuff, we do run a hotline, and we will make sure we share it with viewers, but the number is 630-930-2987. If you have any questions about travel-related issues or have family facing challenges at the airport, I encourage you to text that number. Please don't call. I will not pick up. But text that number with questions or issues, and we will be sure to support you.
All right. Thank you so much for being
My
here
pleasure.
Today.
Thank you for having me.
Keep up with everything going on at Alternatives, or to donate, you can visit us at our website, alternativesyouth.org. You can also follow us at Alternatives Inc. on Instagram or at Alternatives Youth on Facebook. If you want to keep up with Bessie, you can follow her on Instagram and TikTok at Bessie_Alcantara. Thanks for listening.